Blog Talk Radio.
It's time to head inside the film room and break down the tape. The FantasyGuru.com weekly matchup podcast is on. Here's John Hansen and Greg Cosell.
Welcome to the Week 11 matchup podcast here at FantasyGuru.com. I'm John Hansen. Thursday, November 19th, and we're fired up for Week 11. We're getting closer and closer to the fantasy playoffs. Doing our best to help you out here. And we've got our guy Greg Cosell on the line with us here, and we're going to get to it right now. What's up, Greg? Good morning.
Good morning, John. How are you today?
I'm doing well, doing wonderful, and we're ready. We're ready for Week 11. Let's dive right into it here and not waste any time at all, because it's almost crunch time, Greg. I can feel it in your voice. I can hear it.
You're getting ready for those fantasy playoffs. I know you, John. It's an exciting time.
I know. And you know, as we always say, it's the most important fantasy season of all time because, as we know, it's never been bigger. Although, you know, with all this daily stuff, you know, the daily fantasy, you know, it's becoming less and less important, perhaps, the fantasy playoffs, because people are into the daily. But anyway, we digress, and let's get into it. And let's start with tonight's game, Tennessee at Jacksonville. And we've kind of – we're following Blake Bortles and his progressions over the last couple of years here. He's in year number two, and we just kind of keep track of his progress, if you will, Greg. And how is Blake Bortles doing this year? It's good on the stat sheet, but is it as good on film?
I think he still remains a little bit uneven and erratic, John. And I know the numbers have been good, although they weren't quite as good this past week. But overall, the aggregate numbers have been strong. They've certainly been down in games, and he's been forced to throw. And he certainly makes some big-time throws. He just, to me, when I watch him week in and week out, there's just still some ball placement issues. He's not quite as accurate as you'd like him to be. Sometimes I feel he has some field vision issues. So in some ways, he's kind of leveled off a little bit. I'm anxious to see where he goes from here.
A lot of people are wondering about T.J. Yeldon. Now, he's on the injury report this week. He's got a foot issue, and he's not putting up big numbers, but we like him. You like him. Just tell us what you see when you pop in the tape here in terms of T.J. Yeldon. For those who are just wondering about him, you know, is this guy running well? Does he look good? Is he leaving yards on the field? What do you see when you pop on the tape of T.J. Yeldon?
You know, I think he's got very quick feet, very good lateral agility and quickness. I think he's got short area burst. The one thing he clearly lacks, he does not have long speed. I don't think that's needed to be a higher level NFL back. I thought this week there were a couple of runs where he ran harder, looked a little more powerful, because he's not a naturally powerful guy despite his size. But yeah, he's not put up a ton of yards on a consistent basis. And you know what? I don't know offhand what his yards per carry is, but I also know that there's not been many games where he's had an opportunity to carry, let's say, between 18 and 23 times.
Right. I'm going to guess that his yard per carry is right around 4. I don't think it's particularly bad. In fact, you know, let me look that up right now. It is 4.
There you go.
Exactly 4. So there you go. Okay.
Which really, given the team that he's on, is not bad.
Right. Not too bad. And then this Titan defense, they have been pretty decent. But, I mean, this should be a pretty decent matchup here. They just lost McCourty. He is their best corner. And Bortles does have weapons. We're going to see Rashad Greene. I know you like him, the slot receiver, the rookie. And of course, Marquise Lee actually caught a ball last week. Alan Hearns a little bit banged up here. But overall, I would think that Bortles and the Jags will have some success here. Again, Tennessee, they're not overly talented, but they are pretty decent, but they're not overly talented. They did just lose McCourty. What do you think about this Titan D?
You know, I think they've actually played well. I mean, they were really aggressive last week, high percentage blitz versus Cam Newton and the Panthers offense. Wouldn't surprise me to see them do a little more of that this, you know, tonight against Jacksonville. One thing about Jacksonville, they're a downfield passing team. They're an intermediate and downfield passing team. They get the ball down the field. So I think what, when a team does that as their foundation, I think you feel you can get after them a little bit.
Yeah, that'll be interesting. Good reason to run T.J. Yeldon, though. And if Yeldon has any issues, Denard Robinson likely going to be the guy here. In Tennessee, they are transitioning here still. It's Mike Mularkey. He wants to power running two tight ends. Antonio Andrews still the guy, but we could see David Cobb tonight. Give us a quick scouting report on David Cobb, if you can recall from your film study in the offseason.
Yeah, I thought he was a very good between the tackle type runner. You know, quick feet inside, could run in confined space. That's the kind of runner he is, kind of short and squat with good power. I thought he could run the inside zone game. I thought he could run the power game as well. Again, not a breakaway back, but not required. So that's the kind of back I think he is. And I think ultimately that style fits the way Mike Mularkey wants to run. I think Cobb has a better running skill set than Antonio Andrews.
Yeah, and Mariota, not a lot of weapons here. There's no question. They just lost Justin Hunter. Kendall Wright will not play. I do like Harry Douglas today. He did play for Mularkey. Last 2 weeks, he's had 8 targets for Mariota. He's caught all 8 of them. He's got some versatility. He can play inside, outside. You know, this Jaguar D, I know you haven't studied them a ton. You're not, you know, doing 90 to get into the office on Monday morning at 6 a.m. I got to see the Jags. But
I'm watching this week.
Yeah, you did. And, you know, they really focus on the run, stopping the run. They're really good against the run. But on the back end, they don't really have a pass rush, dominant one at least.
No.
And they are vulnerable on the back end, Greg. What do you see from the Jags?
Yeah, I would say that's probably true. They play predominant single high. You know, it's that Gus Bradley approach coming from Seattle where you play a lot of cover three. They play some man, but I think they are somewhat vulnerable on the back end. I don't know if they can be taken advantage of by Tennessee. I think Tennessee has kind of evolved, and I know you like Harry Douglas tonight, but I think Tennessee has somewhat evolved into a tight end-based pass game with Fasano and Delanie Walker.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Mariota will get some digits tonight. By the way, Bleedy Ray Wilson is out. So now McCourty and Ray Wilson are out. So basically that's two of their top three corners.
And what Parrish about Parrish Cox? He did not play on Sunday.
He's in.
Okay. So he'll start. He'll start.
He's probable. Yeah, he's probable. So there you go. And then their other corner would be Sensabaugh, I guess.
Sensabaugh will play outside, and Cody Riggs, the free agent rookie from Notre Dame, will play in the slot.
Let's move on, Greg, and let's get to the next game, which is Denver at Chicago. And I know it's obviously very interesting with Brock Osweiler. You said it in the preseason that this Bear defense was going to be pretty good and was going to improve, really, was your point. And they are solid. I'm not impressed with any one area that they have or any one aspect, pass rush or anything like that, but they're just – they're disciplined, seemingly, and they don't give up a lot of big plays. I'm shocked. But it's Brock Osweiler. And, Greg, is there a chance that this is an upgrade for all their players because of Osweiler's mobility and arm?
Here's the way I would answer that. We don't know about Brock Osweiler, but what I will say is this. I think you will see the Gary Kubiak offense, the way Kubiak really wants to run it in play now. I think you'll see Osweiler under center. I think you'll see the run game. Now, it doesn't mean it'll be successful, but you'll see it. I think you'll see the boot action under center, you know, just like Kubiak did last year with Flacco. I think there's a somewhat of an analogy there between Flacco and Osweiler in terms of movement I'm talking about.
Absolutely.
Osweiler does have some movement. So I think you'll see the Kubiak offense in the way he truly wants it to run. The success of it, that remains to be seen. None of us know what Brock Osweiler is going to do this Sunday.
Sure. But if he completes passes and has success, now you're running Kubiak's offense. Now you're under center. Now you got the boot action. Hey, it may actually work out and help out the running game. And I'm still not giving up on C.J. Anderson. I talked to a guy out in Denver yesterday who's really connected, and he agrees C.J. Anderson has run well the last couple of weeks, and maybe they've used Hillman because they need a spark and they need some juice, and
right.
they need some explosiveness. So it's going to be that's a very interesting thing. But of course, we don't know, is Brock Osweiler going to actually throw catchable balls accurately with, you know, touch timing anticipation? And if so, then we're okay here. But, you know, that's certainly a great unknown here. Emmanuel Sanders also a little bit banged up here. For the Bears, you know, last week Cutler's numbers were great, but that really is a function of a couple of busts on the part of the Rams. This is a nasty matchup here for Cutler and the Broncos against Denver. I mean, this defense is very good in every level. I mean, do you see – I mean, it would be impressive, let's put it that way, if Cutler has a very good game against this defense. It looks like Jeffrey is going to play Alshon Jeffrey for the Bears, who I actually talked to this week. He did say he was feeling okay and feeling pretty good with that groin injury. But it would be impressive if they have a good performance here again against this defense. Looks like it's going to be Langford again, Greg.
Yeah, and you know, they've played pretty well offensively. You know, look, last week Cutler had big numbers. I think he threw two balls more than 10 yards in the air from the line of scrimmage. But, you know, that's the way the game played out. I think he's been a better quarterback this year, sort of a more controlled quarterback. Whether that remains, only time will tell. Langford, they've used Langford in some ways just like they use Forte. They split him out. They detach him from the formation. They've gotten him matched up on linebackers at times. Now, the Broncos are a dime defense, not a nickel defense, so you might not get the matchup on a linebacker, but I think they'd still feel comfortable with him on a safety. So Langford has become a pretty good receiver. He caught the long touchdown on a screen last week. He's a good open field runner. You know, it's an interesting matchup. Chicago has played better on both sides of the ball than I think people would have expected.
Yeah, quarterbacks the last three games against Denver, you know, they have not thrown a touchdown pass, for one. They have not given up a touchdown pass. They're averaging only 5.9 yards an attempt. And then you look at running backs.
Yep.
They're averaging 3 yards a carry against Denver, and they've scored one rushing touchdown. Running backs have the last three games. So it's a very challenging matchup here.
It's a challenge. It's a challenge.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And let's move on to Oakland at Detroit. And we were just talking about it earlier in the week, how the Lions just they simply cannot run the football. Although there's some talk, maybe a little bit more opportunities for Amir Abdullah. And I said earlier, I think I'll take the fumbling if Abdullah can pop off some running plays. Is that when you watch the Lions, I don't know if you've seen them a ton this year, but is that something that could really – be a game changer? I mean, I don't think it's going to happen, but on the chance that they can actually start running the ball, maybe Abdullah gets opportunities, they could pop off some long runs. It feels like that they could just kind of take it from there and have success.
You know, a very quick aside, John, and I know you've heard me talk about this. We've probably had this conversation. You know, it became very much in vogue to say over the last 3-4 years how running backs are irrelevant, the running game doesn't matter. And I always said, you know, not so fast. And I think it's coming around a little bit. I mean, no one's suggesting that the running back is the more important player in an offense than a quarterback. But if you can't run the ball, and you don't have to run for 150 yards a game, but if you can't line up in the NFL and run the ball, then it's really hard to play consistent offense. And the Lions are a great example of that. And Stafford being the kind of somewhat inconsistent quarterback that he is, without a run game, it's too hard. He can't play in that way. They need a run game. And I guess Abdullah has had fumble issues, but he's the best back in terms of ability.
No question. I don't think Stafford is really part of the problem, but he's not exactly part of the solution thus far in Detroit. And we'll see if they can run the football. And you kind of like this Raider D a little bit in terms of they're not a sieve. And I know you saw them recently. How are they improving?
Well, now I'm concerned because of the issue, you know, Aldon Smith being gone.
Right.
I thought they were developing a really good sub-package pass rush with Mack and Smith on the outside and Edwards and Autry on the inside, and I thought they had a chance to be really, really good with more time. without Smith, that changes the entire dynamic totally, because he's a big, big-time pass rusher. But I think the defense is an improving unit. I think they're past the point of getting, you know, can they be torched? Look, Ben Roethlisberger put up some big numbers a couple of weeks ago, but that's Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah.
I don't think they're, and Pittsburgh obviously has big-time weapons. I don't think they're a defense that's going to get consistently torched anymore. I think they're better than that now.
And the Lion D is also not very good. So Derek Carr should be in pretty good shape here. Latavius Murray, Amari Cooper, Michael Crabtree, Clive Wofford has now scored three of the last four. So this should be a fantasy-friendly game here in Detroit. Let's move on to Indy at Atlanta. And let's talk about Matt Hasselbeck. As we've said a couple of times here on the podcast, the dude's 40 years old. He's kind of seen it all. This is a pretty basic defense in Atlanta. Shouldn't be too hard to prepare for. And again, I'm expecting more Frank Gore, shorter passing attack, get the ball out of Hasselbeck's hands and just kind of take it from there.
Yeah, he played a similar defense that he started against earlier this season, conceptually in Jacksonville. But again, there's not much from an intellectual standpoint that's going to get beyond Hasselbeck. He's seen everything. I would expect the Colts offense to be efficient in this game. This defense they're playing against does not have a big-time pass rush. Relatively predictable. It's a disciplined defense and execution defense. So I would expect Hasselbeck to have a very solid game. From a fantasy standpoint, you know, now it comes down to touchdowns because he's not likely to throw for 400 yards. So it comes down to whether he throws touchdowns.
Do you get the sense at all that the tight ends are going to be more involved going forward with Hasselbeck and Rob Chudzinski, or is that kind of a week-to-week proposition probably?
You know, I would personally do that, but again, you know, that's just my way of thinking with Hasselbeck and the fact that Fleener and Allen, I think they're good players, and I think, you know, you have Moncrief, you've got Hilton, you know, you've got some injuries on the outside. I mean, obviously Andre Johnson's still there, but you know, I think the two tight end offense makes sense.
Yeah, and I think that Hasselbeck he had two starts. And one huge game in that stretch was for Kobe Fleener. For Atlanta, you know, I would think that the Colts, who play a lot of man, are going to put Vonta Davis on Julio for the most part. So the secondary guy is looking good here. And Jacob Tammy has had a really nice year. The Colts have given up big numbers to tight ends. And Tammy, he can still move. He's like about 31 now. What do you think here of Jacob Tammy's season? It's been underrated.
Oh, for sure. You know, he was always a really good receiver. I remember when he came out of Kentucky, you know, he was a certain kind of player. You know, he was a receiving tight end, and that's kind of what he is. And, you know, they've really not had a second wideout, quite honestly, who's been a big factor. I mean, you know that from speaking to Roddy White on a weekly basis. You know, Hankerson has been injured. I guess he's coming back this week. But they really haven't had a second wide receiver be a factor. So Tammy, I don't know the numbers offhand, but I would bet Tammy this year probably has about 40 catches.
Absolutely. We had 11 in one game a couple of weeks ago. Let's check that out. Jacob Tammy has got 38 catches, Greg. So there you go. Only one touchdown, though, but I think he's got some juice in this matchup here. Let's move on to the Jets at the Texans. And have you seen the Texan D on tape?
Yes.
Couple
oh,
weeks?
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're improving, obviously, and it's about that front seven. I mean, what do you
think? I was just going to say that. That's where it starts. I think that Watt has played really well over the last month. Whitney Mercilus, who was a first-round pick, has really looked quick and dynamic as a pass rusher. I'd really like to see what Clowney can do if he can get back and play, you know, consistently over four or five. You know, I'd like to see him be able to play the last six games of the year and not come off the field, you know, not miss a game, because I think he's played the run well when he's been on the field. He showed some pass rush ability flashes. I'd like to see if he can become a pass rusher. He needs work as a pass rusher, but he needs that work on the field.
Yeah, Clowney was limited in practice yesterday, but I think the expectation is he's going to actually play. We'll have to keep an eye on their starting corners, Kareem Jackson, Jonathan Joseph. Now, we've talked about this. I don't think their secondary is very good, but it's a moot point kind of if they're going to dominate up front. You know, I think it's a decent – go ahead.
No, they didn't. They have not given up, and which may be surprising, you know, to some people when you look at the players in the secondary, and they've moved people around at safety. They benched Raheem Moore for a while. He's back and playing a little more. But I mean, you know, it looks like you can throw the ball on this team. But hey, we just saw them play Cincinnati, right? Cincinnati with all those weapons, they did not have a big passing day.
Yeah, they did not. And Chris Ivory is, you know, continues to run hard. But you wonder about him. He's kind of worn down a little bit as well. And here, and this is not a particularly good matchup here for Chris Ivory. Ryan Fitzpatrick is expected to go here. I'm going to look at the numbers real quick in terms of what they've given up in terms of the Texans here for Chris Ivory and compare and contrast to his yard per carry average. Ivory, not very good here. Okay, so. Well, you know what? See, these numbers get skewed, but Chris Ivory is averaging only 2.5 yards per carry the last 4 weeks, so that's certainly not very
good.
Well,
he had that one really bad game where he had 23 rushes for 26 yards.
Yeah.
That's really skewed the numbers.
Absolutely here. Moving on to the Texans, and we don't know exactly about the quarterback situation there in Houston, so that's obviously problematic. And the Jet defense, where are you with that Jet defense? I'm obviously they've given up. We talked about it last week. Of course, it didn't work out, but you know they've given up a lot of numbers here. I mean, what's your assessment of this defense, Todd Bowles? I mean, I think they're still a very good defense, but they've certainly not been a shutdown defense.
No, I guess I thought they'd be better. You know, that you'd look at that defense and that they would just, you know, shut teams down. And I mean, when I say shut teams down, I don't mean they're going to pitch a shutout every week, but I don't, like, for instance, I look at when Todd was in Arizona last year, and just watching the tape, I felt that Arizona was a much more sort of aggressive defense that took away what teams did and was more difficult to play against. That's the way I felt watching the tape.
Yeah. Of course, you look at this one here. They can run the ball. Jets have a good run defense.
Yeah.
You're going to have Revis on Hopkins, who's on the injury report. Now it comes down to who's the quarterback, who's the secondary receiver who's going to step up. They did get Cecil Shorts back. For what it's worth, the kid Ryan Griffin, the tight end, did return this past week, and they did get him involved. So, I mean, that was a little surprising because they have not thrown to the tight end all that much, but it's not overly promising offensively for the Texans. There's another team, Greg. They just can't run the ball. Although,
no.
for a team that can't run the ball, they've had a lot more success throwing it than the Lions.
No, and Hoyer, I mean, and I guess he will not play this week, but Hoyer has actually played pretty well this year.
Yeah, not sure he's rolled out yet, though. Let me see if there's anything new on that as we do the podcast.
No, I don't think it's official one way or the other, but
Yeah.
So I guess that's tough to answer. But normally guys with concussions, the way the league has been working, is they're not necessarily playing the next week.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. The very latest is it's unlikely. TJ Yates would be your guy here. And certainly he seemingly knows this offense, and he's been there obviously before, and he did play pretty well off the bench last week. Moving on, Tampa at Philadelphia. And I know you look at this Tampa defense. You've seen it. How are they so good against the run these days? Because they're lights out.
Speed and quickness. They're a lot of front seven speed. They do a lot of slanting. They play to their quickness. They get into gaps. They're tough to block. And their two stacked backers, Levante David and Quan Alexander, are very, very quick and very fast.
And the Eagles are running it pretty well. I would imagine that they'll just run the ball. I mean, if DeMarco Murray is averaging 2.7 yards a carry, Greg, they're going to continue to run it, don't you think?
Yes. I think the Eagles essentially do the same thing every week. My guess is that Ryan Matthews will be out this week, which in an odd way I think will be very interesting because Darren Sproles in the last month or so has not really been a big part of this offense, and this might be the week with Murray likely out, that they get Sproles more snaps and more involved. Because the one area in which Sproles is very good, obviously, is the pass game. But he's not been a factor in the pass game over the last month or so.
And the Bucks are giving up numbers in the passing game. You seemingly think that they're getting better, though, and this is what Lovie Smith does. He comes into a place and they get slowly but surely better. What do you think of the matchup when they do throw it for likely Mark Sanchez? You've got a little bit more mobility now. You've got Zach Ertz playing pretty well, been pretty consistently involved. Otherwise, you know, you got a bunch of receivers running around, Greg, I guess, and they don't have a go-to guy. That kills us in the fantasy world. But what do you think of the matchup here for Sanchez when he throws against Tampa? At least I don't see a nasty pass rush on the other side with the Bucs.
No, but they're, you know, it's a Lovie defense. They play with discipline. They don't necessarily have great players in the back end where you go, wow, that's, you know, these guys are tough to throw against. But they play a lot of zone, cover two, cover three, with discipline. Bradley McDougal has kind of emerged as a pretty solid, strong safety type player. And when they play cover three, of course, he's down in the box. You know, Chris Conte is essentially their deep safety, occasionally blitzes. And Chris Conte, again, they've been able to keep him from being a liability in coverage. So it's a disciplined defense. It's becoming a Lovie Smith defense. He doesn't have all the pieces, John, that he'd like to have, and that's what you draft for, that's what you sign free agents for, but they're beginning to take shape in the way that he wants them to play.
Jameis threw a couple of picks last week.
Yep.
I personally think that their lack of weaponry in the passing game is hurting their running game, because Doug Martin's yard per carry average has been really around three the last 3 weeks, and I still think he's running hard. But this matchup here against Philadelphia's defense, they've got a pretty good run defense, Greg, so that's one thing. And Tampa Bay, they don't really have much. That is annoying, that phone, by the way. They don't really have much, Greg. I don't like that lady's voice on the phone. But anyway, they don't really have much here, Greg. How difficult is it going to be for Jameis in this one if they can't run it with a lot of success? They literally just have Mike Evans, and that's it.
Yeah, they do, and they're playing against a defense that, you know, if they're going to go base personnel and run the ball, they're going to get the Eagles, you know, base 3-4, very hard to run the ball with that front three. So it'll be interesting to see how Dirk Koetter chooses to play. Obviously, without Jackson, their other two receivers have been Dye and Humphreys. So, you know, not a group that necessarily scares a defense. So I think you're going to see a very aggressive Eagles defense. I think they're going to blitz a lot. They want to get Jameis a little uncomfortable. He doesn't have great lower body movement, and they're going to shut down the run. So I think this Tampa's going to struggle, I think, offensively in this game.
Yeah, so good news for the fantasy defense of the Eagles. They have a chance to make some big plays here, I think, against a potentially one-dimensional offense, and Jameis certainly will throw it to the other team. Let's go on to Green Bay at Minnesota, and we did talk about this, and now Mike Zimmer's getting a lot of attention. The Vikings have won five in a row. They're 7-2. You know, I watch them, and they are very disciplined. They play very well as a team. Their tackling is unbelievable. So this is a problem, Greg. I see them just basically on these receivers, like all over them. These guys aren't getting open in Green Bay. I see him stopping the run pretty well. I see this as a very challenging matchup for Green Bay. I don't think they're going to turn it around in this one, Greg. Your thoughts on this matchup for Green Bay's offense?
Well, assuming Green Bay continues to play the way they've been playing, and you know, and Rodgers has still put up numbers the last 2 weeks from a fantasy standpoint, but the offense has not looked good. And so assuming they continue to play the same way, this is a difficult defense. Now, they don't play a ton of man, but keep one thing in mind. The Packers just played the Lions and the Panthers, two teams that don't normally play a lot of man, and they played a whole lot more man against Green Bay. So I think that the Vikings do have corners that can play man pretty effectively. We'll see if Mike Zimmer decides to do more of that. They've been a predominant zone defense playing with a two-deep shell, but we'll see. But you hit it right on the head. They're a very disciplined defense. They do not make coverage mistakes.
Yeah. What do you have any thoughts on Randall Cobb? I mean, earlier in the year, it was an injury situation. He seemingly has just had a down year. I'm sure the loss of Jordy Nelson has hurt him, and I'm sure their inability to run it effectively has hurt him. But do you have any thoughts on what you've seen from Randall Cobb the last 4, 5, 6, 7 weeks?
I mean, I just know what I've seen. I can't tell you why, but he has struggled as well to get open against man coverage, which has, I think, probably been surprising to people. But that's the way it's been. And they really, you know, Devontae Adams was hurt for a while, and now he's back, and he had a ton of targets this past week. I still think he has a chance to be a really good player, but he may be one of those guys that's more like a second receiver, you know, because he's not naturally explosive. So I don't know, but they're struggling to win against man, and therefore they're seeing a lot more of it.
When you look at the Vikings, who jumps off the screen to you when you pop in the tape defensively? I know you're impressed with Linval Joseph, the former Giant.
Very much so. Yep.
Anybody else here defensively who, like, you're like, oh my God, this guy's doing really well?
You know, I think Everson Griffin always flashes as a pass rusher. You know, I think Harrison Smith is sort of their version of Eric Weddle. They use him in multidimensional ways, and he does a lot of things really well. The kind of player that may not, you know, jump off at you like a Troy Polamalu did, but Smith does a lot of things well and is critical to their defense.
Anthony Barr? Any thoughts
on
him?
Their nickel linebackers are good. I mean, Kendricks has been hurt the last two games, but they had Kendricks and Barr playing nickel. With Kendricks hurt, it's been Barr and Greenway. But Barr plays literally every snap. They don't use him as a pure pass rusher. Once in a while, he rushes the quarterback. So I think most people thought when he came out of UCLA, he'd develop into a pass rusher. But that's not the way that he's used. But he's really athletic. He can play in space.
Yeah, by the way, Eric Kendricks did practice yesterday. And I think Greenway played middle linebacker last week, the first time in his career, actually. And, you know, Chad Greenway may actually – it's hard to believe that he's like the old man here now, and he actually might be one of their lesser players, actually, on defense at this point.
Yeah, Greenway did play middle linebacker last week.
Yeah. For Minnesota, you know, I'm a little disappointed because – we all knew it was going to be Peterson, but, you know, as we break down this game, and Peterson has run well on Green Bay, and it's going to be all Peterson, but, you know, they have kind of devolved, I think. And at least from my perspective in fantasy, we can't really rely on anyone in the passing attack.
No.
Is that an indication of the lack of progress for Teddy? Is that an indictment on Teddy, or is that just – it is kind of what it is here with Peterson dominating – the touches in the offense?
Well, I don't know if it's an indictment because I don't view it that way. I think it's a recognition of his skill set within the context of their team, complementary skill set. And when they when you have a big time back and an excellent defense, and the quarterback has a complementary skill set, this is how you play.
Yeah.
So I mean, I guess maybe a lot of people thought that, hey, you know, Bridgewater was going to, you know, throw 30, 35 times a game, put up, you know, 300 yards, 2 touchdowns a week, that kind of thing. You know, and he'll have some games like that, by the way. But that's not what he is. And he's a complimentary quarterback who needs a run game and a defense. And this team has evolved into that style of team, which, by the way, there's a lot of people who believe that that's the better way to build a team. Because usually the defense travels. Usually your defense travels no matter where you play.
Right.
And Peterson, with very few exceptions, you know, sustains the run game. I mean, he has very few 20 for 40 games. Even his bad games, he might go 24 for 79, but he's not totally shut down.
Yeah, I just thought maybe we'd take it to another level with Peterson plus some weaponry, have a little bit more balance. But the passing attack here is just, there's not much going on here. They bring in Mike Wallace. He's literally worthless. Kyle Rudolph, no offense to Kyle Rudolph, but he had one of the worst end zone drops I've ever seen last week.
I remember it.
But, you know, again, that's probably a lack of reps. I mean, I'm fat. What do they do in practice? It's like you practice.
Well, he just dropped an easy pass,
and
then we'll move on, but just watching the game last week, but I think this has been somewhat true throughout much of the season. When you watch their offense, based on their personnel and their play calling, it's kind of evident that they don't feel that they can effectively break down pass defenses. So
right.
whether that's a Bridgewater thing, whether it's an O-line issue, whether it's a receiver issue, we don't know the world view. From fantasy, it comes down to Bridgewater because you want the quarterback and the receivers to have numbers. But you know, we don't know if Norv Turner had truth serum, what he'd say, but it's clear from watching the tape that they're not really looking to have an expansive pass game.
That's a good point. But I got to tell you, I thought that they would have enough to break down pass defenses with Rudolph and Wallace and Johnson and Jarius White in the slot and all that. But
somewhere
it's just not
along
happening.
The line, they don't see it that way.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, right. Right. And look, you know, the O-line is part of – we always say this, but whenever something happens, there's probably 5, 6, 7 different reasons why. The O-line is not very good in Minnesota. I mean, maybe blocking for the run, they're okay. But they're right, they're not good in pass pro. Maybe that's the start of all this.
Yeah, and the bottom line is there's no better back in the NFL creating yards and can find space than Peterson. So he does not need a high-level O-line to be an effective back.
The Minnesota Viking podcast. Oh, wait, no, that's not a Minnesota Viking podcast. Let's move on.
Sorry, I guess we digressed on the Vikings.
No, that's okay. Well, that's the team I rooted for growing up. So, you know, I guess I'm a Vikings fan still, even though I'm not like I used to be. Washington at Carolina and Kirk Cousins. I know you're a little perplexed by that game because you're popping. Why don't you tell the story? You popped in the tape, you saw the numbers, and you're like, he didn't really do anything, Kirk Cousins, against the Saints last week.
Well, it's funny because I got to halftime and I looked at the stats and he threw for 295 yards in the first half. And, you know, I sort of chart, you know, certain plays, as you know, and he really made one difficult NFL throw in the first half, which was the third play of the game. It was a slot fade to Deshaun for 42 yards. And, the rest were a lot of screens with run after catch, some option routes with backs who broke wide open. And it takes nothing away from Cousins. He executed the offense at a very high level, and he made the throws that presented themselves extremely well. They just were not difficult NFL throws. And now he's playing against a defense this week in Carolina. First of all, I don't believe they'll run the ball. Not many people run with sustaining consistency against Carolina. And they're not going to get the run after catch that they got against the Saints. So he might complete balls, but they're not going to get the run after catch. You know, when you play Carolina, even if you complete a ball in the short area and it looks like there's space, all of a sudden there's Kuechly, there's Davis. These guys, they run, and their D-line is very quick as well. So they're not going to get those kinds of plays. Now, I look at this game as a very interesting game for Cousins. Not a make-or-break game for his career, but I think that there's been improvement in Cousins, clearly. And now he's going on the road and playing a difficult opponent. I wouldn't expect him to put up big numbers, John. You know, he's not going to throw for 350 or 400, but that's not what I would look at as far as how to determine how he plays. So I think this is a very interesting game for Kirk Cousins.
Yeah, if it's a close game and he throws for only 200 and he doesn't turn the ball over, that's a win.
Exactly.
For Cousins.
It might not be a fantasy win, but it's a win for him.
Right, right. And Josh Norman, you know, he's traveling a little bit more. The way I look at it, the way I think, I got to figure that they're going to put Norman on Deshaun because he's a major difference maker. And you got, although they've given up some numbers, the Panthers, you've got, you know, Davis and Kuechly to cover, you know, Reed. I would kind of look at Pierre Garçon maybe in this game, a little Jamison Crowder here, but we're not optimistic about the Redskin offense here in this matchup. And Carolina, you know, they run it every week. That's a big foundation.
Yep.
But I would think in this one that they'll have some success with Jonathan Stewart. The matchup's good by the numbers here. Cam is Cam. I mean, I don't know what else we can say. Any other thoughts here? Devin Funchess seemingly continuing to come on here, and I think that's worth noting because, you know, even for next year, they could have a really nice receiving core if he's your number two with Kelvin Benjamin along with Greg Olsen. But, you know, Cam does have some weapons these days to throw to.
No, and I think they've become an offense with a clear identity, John. I think they – I mean, again, every team tweaks. We know that. But I think they sort of do – similar things conceptually every week. We know about their run game and its multiple dimensions. They attack at the intermediate levels and the deeper levels in the pass game. We know they're going to throw the ball to Olsen. They're going to line him up, and they're going to throw the routes they throw to him, which are a lot of wheel-type routes, seam routes. You know, there are certain routes they throw to Olsen. They throw those every single week. So they've become an offense with a clear identity. And Cam will probably never be a 65% passer, but his ability in the run game and what he gives them in that run game overall separates him from other players.
Greg Olsen caught all 8 of his targets last week. What a really, really good player he is, and good dude
as
well.
He really is.
Yeah, he's amazing. Let's move on to Dallas at Miami. And I'm a little worried about Tony Romo with some rust here, but – you know, I know you saw the Dolphin defense here. Sue was dominant last week. But, A, are we worried about pass rush with Romo just coming back in Miami? No Cam Wake for the Dolphins. And, B, where are they in the secondary? Brent Grimes was out last week because he had food poisoning. But I know you said earlier in the year that he's not exactly had a great year here. So talk about this matchup here for Romo and the Cowboys.
Well, since no one knows about Romo, I'll say this. If this was the normal Romo, yeah, I would say this matchup highly favors Dallas. So I think just from a personnel standpoint, I think that absolutely is the case. So let's assume Romo can play. I think that it favors Dallas for sure.
Okay. Give me some thoughts on that. With McFadden is going to be getting the ball as a runner. You got Dez, a number one.
They'll keep giving him the ball. There's no question about that. But I think Dez becomes a much larger factor when Romo plays, much larger. Even Terrence Williams will become a factor. We know about Witten. I don't see this defense. Can they disrupt on the line of scrimmage? They can. I think Miami at their best, if Sue is disruptive and dominant as he was last week, he can make plays, no question. But I think at the linebacker position and in the back end, I think Jones at safety is a very good player, but I think at corner they're vulnerable. And I think if Romo's healthy, they have a lot of weapons and they have options here.
Yeah, and worth noting that the Dolphins gave up 11 grabs for 202 to Eagle tight ends last week.
Well, and a lot of that came about. I mean, I don't think Dallas will do this, but they had trouble lining up against the Eagle speed tempo. So I think that was a specific game.
Gotcha. And then Miami's offense, it looks like. Go ahead.
I don't know what to make of this offense, John. I don't. They don't run with consistency. Although I like Jay Ajayi better as a runner than Lamar Miller. We'll see if they continue to get him more involved. They don't really have an intermediate and vertical pass game that you can count on a week-to-week basis. They've gotten nothing, obviously, out of Devontae Parker. And they drafted him 14th, so I assume they expected something. As much as we like Landry, he's a short intermediate receiver. Matthews is really the same guy, and I like him too, but they're the same guy. So, they don't really have much in the pass game that allows them on a week-to-week basis to really stretch and stress defenses.
Yeah, and you know what the sad thing is? I talked to a guy who covers the team for a big paper down there in the summer, and this guy was a Tannehill skeptic for years.
Right.
He told me he's turned the corner, throwing the ball down the field. He's not the same guy. He can do it, but we're not seeing it. They don't have anyone who can run. It's so limited, this offense, and it's just so frustrating because I do think Tannehill is a pretty good player. But you got two slot receivers, an inconsistent running attack, and that's about it. I mean, that's it. So, and then this matchup here is not wonderful. They're going to get Sean Lee back, the Cowboys, and that's a big-time game changer here in terms of trying to slow down Lamar Miller in this offense.
I think it is because I think he's the key to their whole defense.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So we'll see again next year. I mean, we'll see it. We'll try again next year. But you know what? I'm not convinced that Bill Lazor and these guys are going to make it through this too, of course. So we could be looking at a whole new system here in Miami next year. So very frustrating. St. Louis at Baltimore. And, Case Keenum, we were just talking about it last night. He's a gunslinger, Greg. I mean, he could – You know, he's a guy who could throw for 300 or 30, basically, is the way I look at
well,
it.
Well, I was going to say, John, he's in the game because Nick Foles was not executing basic plays. You know, when you're a run-first team, okay, and you line up and run personnel and run formations, very often, I mean, obviously not on third and nine, but very often your pass game involves shot plays out of base personnel and base looks. And when you call those plays, very often you get what you want because you're calling them against an anticipated defense. And Nick Foles was not executing those plays. Either he was not turning it loose or he was missing them. So, you know, at the very least, if they call those plays, and they will because that's the nature of their offense, they want Case Keenum to execute those plays. Now, I think he's got a little movement ability. You know, he's got, I mean, I hate talking like this, but, I mean, he does have a little fire to him. I think he's an aggressive personality, you know, which you know, I'm not sure that Nick Foles is that guy. So, you know, he might fit the way what they want to do better. Now, Case Keenum, he's been in the league a while. We know he's probably not a full-time starter, but the way he can play is with a really good run game and a really good defense, and theoretically they have that.
Yeah, and they got a lot of weapons. It's interesting. You know, the tight ends as a group, or it's a good duo. They've added Wes Welker, who did have six targets last week. Even Brian Quick had seven targets last week. Plus you got Tavon Austin and Kenny Britt. Remember, about 2 years ago, two, 3 years ago, the Texans were just, God, they were just boring. There was nothing going on. And then he came in there, and like all of a sudden, Andre Johnson's catching touchdowns, making plays. So that's going to be interesting.
He's willing to turn it loose, and sometimes Nick Foles is not. And, you know, I think that's what they want. They want the ball thrown.
Absolutely. And it's a good matchup here against the Baltimore Ravens. And then these Ravens continue to – they find ways to get it done here with Joe Flacco. We did talk about it. The downfield throws have been a little underwhelming here, but
– he's not throwing it as well with the deep ball this year.
You see some flashes from Max Williams last week. A lot of people in keeper and dynasty leagues should pick him up. I did. I actually picked him up in our league that we have for the website where we can keep players forever. Last week, I said, oh, look at that. He's on the waiver wire. I picked him up, and lo and behold, he made a play last week, Max Williams.
He looks pretty good. I mean, I thought they did some really good things offensively in the past game, which, of course, get lost because they lost the game. But I thought they did some really good things conceptually. They got their tight ends a little bit involved. But Max Williams moves very well. Again, I would expect him to be more involved in the past game because they don't have very much on the outside. And that's just been killing them all season.
Does Max Williams strike you? He does me as a guy, maybe not next year, but possibly next year, but at the latest the year after that, where he's like catching like 80 balls. Do you see him as that type of guy?
Yeah, I could see that. He's very athletic as a pass receiver.
Unbelievable hands, right?
Yeah, he has very good receiving skill. I mean, he caught the touchdown really easily, but I just like the way he moves. He's a very easy mover, John.
Right, gotcha. Cincinnati at Arizona, we saw the bad Andy Dalton last week, which I guess is a concern. It is for me, actually, in this one against the Cardinals on the road, national TV. But, you know, certainly they have weapons against Arizona. What do you think of this matchup? The Cardinals play a bunch of DBs on their front, but they're still giving up well under 4 yards a carry. They rally to the ball. They're still pretty good against the run. They don't have a dominant pass rush, but you got Patrick Peterson likely going to lock down A.J. Green. And then, you know, Tyrann Mathieu doing a good job. It looks to me like the Cardinals match up pretty well against the Bengals. Greg, your thoughts there?
Yeah, and the Bengals, you know, if you look at just the pure numbers, the Bengals have not run the ball terribly. If you just look at pure numbers, you know, maybe yards per game, but they only average 3.9 yards per rush, as you probably know. And there's been no consistency to their run game at all this year. I know that everybody thought, including myself, that we'd be looking at a 1,200-yard rusher in Jeremy Hill. That's not going to happen. And there's been sort of developing all season long their inability to run the ball with any consistency. And no matter what kind of weapons you have on the outside, and at the end of the day, even though Dalton has clearly been an improved player, he's still really a complementary piece. And if there's no run game, I think at some point his efficiency will drop. And I'm not suggesting he's now ready to go in the tank, John, but I think over the last couple of weeks he's not been quite as efficient.
Yeah, no question. Speaking of efficient, Carson Palmer and the Cardinals, they've been incredibly efficient. What do you think of this matchup here? Because the Bengals do have a good depth in the secondary. They don't have a dominant pass rush, but they've got good corners. You got to execute to beat them, but the thing is, the Cardinals, well, they execute with Carson Palmer.
Yeah, they're like Minnesota's defense in many ways, and which makes perfect sense because that Zimmer was in Cincinnati and Paul Gunther worked for him for a long time. They play a lot of two-shell. They're execution-based. They play with great discipline. When I watch Arizona's one of my most favorite offenses to watch each and every week because I love concepts in the pass game. And, you know, they have great concepts, and then they just get to those concepts in so many different ways. So you can be watching tape, and after a while you go, oh, I've seen that before, I've seen that before. And then you look at the formations, and they're totally different. So, you know, to me, they're an offense that is hard to stop unless you can really get consistent pressure on Palmer. And even then, last week, Seattle did that, and Palmer had an outstanding game. But I think that's what you have to do. You've got to find a way to speed up Carson Palmer and make him as uncomfortable as you possibly can.
It feels to me as if one of the side reasons that they're having all this success, I think ultimately it comes down to Palmer physically has been in great shape, and it's year three of Bruce Arians, and they've really expanded things, and there's a huge comfort level there with Palmer and all the receivers. But it also feels like the running attack has been, it's been more of a presence than ever.
Yes.
And you think that a lot of things start off and work off of that running attack and that commitment to Chris Johnson?
Well, I think they've just made a commitment to balance. I don't think that the offense works off the run. I just think they've made a commitment to run the ball, you know, because believe me, they line up in the gun, they line up in pistol, they line up in a lot of different things. I don't think they have to run to be able to throw, let's put it that way. But I think they've just made a commitment to be as balanced as they can be. And there's a difference. Some teams have to run to throw. They don't have to run to throw, but I think Arians recognizes that you can't just be a one-dimensional offense.
Right. That's totally fair. Let's move on to San Fran at Seattle, Greg. Let's get into it. Let's dive into the hashtag analysis. Well, actually, let's not, because the Niners are a mess, and they're in Seattle. Boy, there's not much we can really say.
So you don't figure that San Francisco is going to put up 39 in Seattle the way Arizona did?
Blaine Gabbert handing it off to Sean Drawn, it's real, and throwing it to Garrett Celek. It's very tempting for me to predict fireworks, Greg, but I just cannot do that in Seattle. We'll see about Anquan Boldin, but how about that Torrey Smith? How's he working out? Not well.
And he's a function, you know, Torrey Smith has to be part of an offense in which the quarterback is very good, which he was with Flacco for years, obviously. I don't expect much from the Niner offense in this game. I'm just curious to see Gabbert if he gets the ball out. See, if you look at Gabbert's track record, this could be a hard game for him because he's going to get pressured. Now, I'm very anxious to see how San Francisco plays. And beyond that, I know this game is not necessarily a big marquee fantasy game, so we can move on. But I'm just anxious to see if Gabbert, after some time as a backup and all that, if he's still the same in terms of handling pressure because he did not do that well in Jacksonville.
Well, and unfortunately for him, the Seahawks pass rush is coming on here. So, you know, I said it a couple of weeks ago. Oh, Blaine Gabbert will probably have success. How many times do we see it? Guys come off the bench, they make a big change, whatever. Coach is fired, initial success, but then they kind of settle back and revert to what they are. I would think that'll happen in this one and for Seattle. Hey, we got Paul Richardson in the mix now. So, yet another speedy vertical threat to potentially catch a bomb from Russell Wilson. So it's crystal clear every week who's getting the ball in Seattle. Actually, it's the complete opposite of that. Jimmy Graham, you know, every week now it's more negative than positive with Jimmy Graham in terms of, even though he's seemingly picking up on the schoolyard play of this offense in terms of the improvisational stuff. It doesn't feel like, Greg, they're doing a good job getting him the ball and getting him in the offense. Let's say that.
No, because I think this offense does not have a lot of continuity in the pass game. I think it becomes, you know, their structured play, this sounds crazy to say, I just thought of this, their structured plays are becoming random. You know, there's no real sense that, okay, this is what they do, so you know that this guy's going to get the ball and this guy's going to get the ball. Their structured pass offense has become almost random in its execution.
Let's move on to Casey at San Diego. I know you haven't seen these teams on tape that much, but the Chief D is getting a lot better. I mean, Phil Rivers is Rivers, and they, you know, I think this could be a little bit of a higher scoring game. You got Malcolm Floyd likely out, Stevie Johnson going to get the ball, Antonio Gates, tough matchup by the numbers. The Chiefs have been really stingy against the tight end. Melvin Gordon has been incredibly inefficient. Danny Woodhead, the opposite, incredibly efficient. For KC, you know, a decent enough matchup here, although I guess the Chargers are a little bit better off than they were a couple of weeks ago. You got Barrett not on the injury. Well, he actually is on the injury report, but he had a full participation in practice. Weddle is now back. So it's not a brilliant matchup overall for either side, but I think we'll see some points in this one. Do you have any thoughts at all on this matchup, Greg? KC at San Diego?
You know, there are two teams just in the last 2-3 weeks I haven't seen a ton of. You know, I just seeing games on TV mostly, you know, we know what the Chiefs' offense is. You know, they're not going to put up big numbers in the pass game, more than likely, unless they happen to hit a big one. You know, it's not that kind of pass game. You know, I think that Andy has recognized that, and there's sort of specialty plays. I don't want to call them gimmick plays, but they're sort of specialty plays, you know, whether they're screens, whether they're jet sweeps. You know, there's ways to get the ball to some of his explosive players, but I think it's not an offense necessarily that is – you can't really count on it on a week-to-week basis.
Buffalo at New England here finally, and you can't count on the Bills on a week-to-week basis. LeSean McCoy does look very, very good, but – I've got some concerns here with Tyrod Taylor and the Bills. It's a very basic offense. They don't throw it a lot. And I would think with the success they had last time that they'd look to do the same thing. 8 sacks, 3 picks of Tyrod Taylor. I mean, Greg, is it as simple just to say keep him in the pocket and make him throw the football, and that's how you're going to beat Tyrod Taylor and slow him down?
Well, that's not the way Rex wants to play. The last time they played week two, the game got away from them. Taylor only threw and did all that because the game got away from them. If this game plays out the way Rex wants it to play out, Tyrod Taylor is going to drop back 18 times. Now, I'm not saying that's going to happen, but they know what they have. They have a really limited pass offense. You know, you talk to football people, you know, offensive people in football, and they struggle to watch this offense because it's so remedial. To me, the other side of the ball is what determines this game. You know, the last time, the Bills could not stop New England. Now, New England did have Edelman. They did have Lewis. And that was a game where Brady was an empty 22 times and killed them out of empty no-back sets. Will they do that again? That's hard to answer. You know, you and I talked that they might go back to what they did a lot of last year, where Blunt's on the field and their pass game becomes a lot more Brady under center with that quick bang play action that they were so good at last year. Now they have bigger bodied receivers. LaFell's back. He's good running those in-breakers. Even Dobson is a bigger bodied receiver. They could go back to that. But to me, the game is won or lost for Buffalo. They on that side of the ball. If they are forced to drop Tyrod Taylor back 35 times, they're not going to win this game.
Yeah, and again, if they
do... Well, let's put it this way. It means the game's not playing out the way they want it to play out.
Absolutely. But I kind of expect that to be the case because, you know, we are talking about Tom Brady here. I know
so Taylor could put up numbers. I mean, he put up numbers the last time. You know, he did have the three, you know, the 8 sacks and the 3 picks, but he ended up completing something like 30 balls for a lot of yards.
Yeah, surprising. But, you know, the passing attack, you know, it's all Sammy Watkins. I mean, there's nothing else.
Well, that's what it's been, which has been surprising because it was a lot of Charles Clay early in the year. Well, the thing is, when you don't throw a lot and your concepts are relatively remedial, normally not a lot of players aren't. It's like Seattle. You know, you don't get a lot of players involved in the pass game.
Yeah. And again, back to the Patriots real quick. you know, I don't think that they have the player to play that Deion Lewis role. I mean, if you're lining up and you're looking for a guy to be in your backfield who could catch some dump offs here and there, I think James White can do that. But they don't have the split guy.
They don't have the guy who can split outside and beat linebackers running wide receiver routes. You're correct.
Yeah, so I think power running and the main beneficiaries from what's gone on here the last few weeks, other than Amendola, which is obvious, are to me LeGarrette Blount and Brandon LaFell. I mean, that's a
yeah.
statement. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Greg.
I like LaFell.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. Very good player, and he's very well-prepared player, and that's very important to note for, in this offense. He knows where he's supposed to be, studies the playbook hard and all that, and Brady trusts him. So his value in the fantasy world is on the rise. Don't be surprised if he just starts putting up 5 catches for 80 yards every week and scores every other week, basically, at worst. So that's going to wrap it up, Greg. We appreciate you as always. Check out the matchup show on ESPN over the weekend with our guys Ron Jaworski and Merrill Hodge, Sal Palantonio. Greg is the man behind that program. Follow Greg on Twitter at Greg Cosell. Check out the other podcasts. And we're going to wrap it up here. Good luck in week 11. And we'll talk to you next week. We'll be recording this likely on Wednesday before Thanksgiving. So for Greg Cosell, I'm John Hansen. We'll talk to you next time.